Welcome to another episode of Digiview with Dummies. And by dummies, we refer to your hosts. I am Corey, the dummiest dummy.
And I'm Zach. I'm so dumb that I thought prime rate was a kind of steak special.
Zach, what is Digiview with Dummies?
Well, Corey, here on the podcast, we like to talk about things to do with debt review. So sometimes we interview people who've been through the debt review process. Other times we get to speak to people who are in the industry and are part of what happens when you go through debt review, like today. So we look forward to sharing a little bit of information about debt review, particularly if you're thinking about, is this right for me? Should I do it? Or maybe if you work in the industry, you'd like to hear what other people in the industry are up to.
Yeah, it's always fun to speak to people that's in the industry and people that's in the know. Can you tell us who we're chatting to today?
Well, let's just say if you were in the office of those guys from Suits, or maybe LA Law, or you were in desperate trouble of needing to get out of jail, who would you call? Well, you're probably going to call an attorney. So we're going to talk to an attorney today. We've got Cornell here from VHT. We're quite excited about that. He'll tell us a little bit about who they are. But I'm hoping that we can speak to him a little bit, get an understanding of how lawyers and attorneys are involved in the debt review process today.
Cornell, welcome. We really appreciate your time today. Thank you for joining us. Let's start off. Give us a little bit of background. Who are you?
Corey, Zach, thank you so much for being part of this and to chat to you guys a little bit today. I'm quite excited. And I think if I start from our side, do we have an hour for that? I think just as a start. So I'm Cornell van Heerden. I'm from VHT Attorneys. I've been an attorney since 2015. However, prior to that, I've been part of the debt review industry since 2013. So I'm an attorney that mostly acts on behalf of debt counselors and their clients being consumers. But prior to that, when I joined, let's call it the good side, for debt counselors, I was an attorney for candidate attorney who worked for the banks, notably Nedbank, MFC, Bayport, and so forth. So I started out in 2013 doing rescission applications for debt review court orders, which was very interesting early days. I had very intense and interesting court applications at the time, and to try and rescind the debt review order at the time was a very difficult job. That's where I got some experience and then moved to the consumer side and debt counselor side since 2015, opened my own practice in 2017, and we've been operating for the past 8 years with offices in Gauteng and in Cape Town. And yeah, we've done about 40,000 debt review court applications over the years as a company. So we've seen different consumers, we've seen different magistrates, we've seen a large amount of DCs come and go as well, I think, who were clients and that don't exist anymore. It's a difficult and a tough industry. And just some interesting tidbits. For example, last year we looked at it. So our team appears in Gauteng and the Western Cape, where we don't appoint any correspondents. And then we appear in those courts physically, personally, as the applicant's attorneys. And by doing that, the team collectively drove 220,000 kilometers in a year. So my petrol account is quite rough every month, but that is what we do for consumers and for debt counselors. And we love doing it ourselves because we think we can then control the standard better. And that's just a little bit from our side. I think I've seen a lot of debt reviews. We've litigated on it. We've done a lot of regulatory work and then also a lot of appearances before the National Consumer Tribunal. So it's in the industry is at a very interesting spot at the moment, and we love what's happening. Always good to chat to like-minded people today.
Well, let's go back to basics. So if you're listening to the podcast today, you might be wondering, okay, but I thought debt counselors did debt review. What do attorneys have to do with debt review? Cornell's talking about going to court, driving a billion kilometers, appearing in the tribunal. What are all these things? But maybe, Cornell, you can make it simple for us. How does the court side and attorneys link up with me as a consumer. I walk in, I go talk to a debt counselor, I say I need help. How's that involved? How are attorneys involved?
I think if I do it in one line, Zach, I can probably say debt counselors restructure, attorneys make it enforceable. So that is a very short line on it. If I expand a little bit, is that a debt counselor would do the hard work of assessing the consumer's financial position and working with the credit providers and then designing a repayment plan, which a consumer can afford. The attorneys would then take that plan, it's simple terms, take it to court or the NCT to make it legally binding, to provide clarity for credit providers and the consumer on what must be paid. So in terms of how you can view it is that I would say think of it like building a house. A DC is the architect and the attorney is the one who gets council approval to make sure that the house stands. And that is basically where we would come on. And I hope that makes sense. You're more than welcome to ask more questions on that.
So basically what you would do is you'd get an instruction from a debt counselor and then you've got a process. Obviously, you just rock up at court or what's the process?
Simplified, yes, we rock up at court. And I think if we go back a little bit, we would get instruction and that means we get all documents from the debt counselor based on the consumer's application. That would be from your Form 16 if we speak industry lingo in terms from the Form 16 to your Form 17 ones, your certificates of balances, the full picture and view of the consumer's financial position. We would then draft a court application by identifying where do we go? Do we go to, and how it works in debt review is we must go where the consumer, where the consumer stays. So that's the jurisdiction. If the consumer stays in Soweto, we go to the Soweto Magistrates Court. If it's Durban, we go to Durban and we draft a court application based on that. Once all documents are signed, we approach a magistrates court, the clerk of the court, and we say, here we are, give us a case number and a court date for, let's call it consumer X. We get a case number and court date. We serve that application with the case number and court date on the relevant credit providers, and then we rock up at the court date, appear in front of the magistrate and say, here we are, this is the position. Can you provide us with the order? We wish it always succeeded at the first appearance, but unfortunately it doesn't, but I think we'll probably jump into that a little bit later.
Well, let's ask, I've got two questions. The first question is, if I'm a consumer and I'm interested in debt review, you mentioned that legally speaking, the debt counselor is the applicant in the matter, but they're representing me and the credit providers. How do I say, hey, I agree with what's going on here? How do I know people aren't just going to court and kind of like signing me up for debt review somehow?
So, yeah, Zach, I think that's a very good question. And it's probably a contentious one in the market if we take a step back. So when a debt counselor brings this application, he needs to sign what we call the founding affidavit, which confirms that he is the applicant and he confirms that a consumer applied for debt review with him. There would be various averments and information in that. However, this is an applicant who is stating something about someone else, not himself or herself as the applicant, which is different than normal court proceedings. Usually the person bringing a court application would say, yeah, I am. This is me. This is my situation. So to get around that, or not get around it, it means that what the debt counselors say is seen as hearsay evidence in law. And to make sure that the information is correct, we draft what is called a confirmatory affidavit. That confirmatory affidavit is in the consumer's name, and it refers to the affidavit done by the debt counselor, which then the consumer says, I confirm the contents. I confirm these are my credit providers. I confirm that I stay in Protea Glen in Soweto. I confirm that this is my salary on a monthly basis and that this is my budget. This is the only thing that I can afford. And therefore, please assist me, court. It just clears it up in terms of that the magistrate knows this is a proper application in front of me. This consumer is participating in a fair manner. And in line with what the Credit Act says. So he is participating, he is requesting that it then be restructured, his credit, based on the confirmatory affidavit confirming the contents.
Okay, so you basically, as the consumer, you're saying, yes, I agree, this thing is legit, let's do it. But there's something else that we've heard about. Maybe, as you mentioned, sometimes the first time you go to court, stuff doesn't quite happen that day for one reason or another, and time goes by. Some courts are very busy, so that can be a bit of time. Is it true that sometimes you have to like send in your salary slip again and send in another proof of something because so much time has gone by?
No, 100%, Zach. I think that is where frustration with the legal process comes in. I think a good example this morning a consumer emailed and said, how confident are you that it will be a success? And a very interesting line he said in his email is, I know I'm putting you on the spot here. And I thought about it a little bit, and what I responded with is that confidence and success doesn't normally go hand in hand in court, which is difficult, because I can be confident that it will be a success, but we cannot predict what will happen. Magistrates differ. We have over 500 different magistrates court countrywide. So a consumer can stay in any one of those jurisdictions. Then certain courts have multiple magistrates. So that just gives you the idea of the scale in terms of that we work with different courts who have different requirements and different human beings who assess a court application with their own set of values and the way that they look at a debt review application. So it's very difficult to enforce a certain standard. So there might be declaratory orders like the funded within declaratory orders and other case law that says you can assess an application based on the information available before you. But realistically, we're working with a consumer's financial position. And now we sit with a magistrate who look at it and say, but listen, this budget seems like a rough one. This consumer is clearly struggling, but the salary advice is 7-8 months old. I'm just worried. And it's a legit question of that they are worried, as instead of being just difficult, they just want to make sure, can this consumer still afford it? And you understand that, but it is difficult to get around what is needed for the consumer at the time, and that we are there and say, but listen, the position is the consumer is still paying, they can still afford it, it's best for everyone if we get the order. And sometimes that is not seen. They think, you don't want to comply as an attorney with my request from court, or credit provider think you're just postponing matters to frustrate. And that's not the case. You just sit with the reality that there's different requirements, and they would say, I don't like this lease agreement because it actually expired 2 weeks ago, but we issued the application 4 months ago and we waited for a court date. So it's stuff like that happens. And it's a multitude of stuff that can result in a postponement, which frustrates consumers as well. They believe, I've worked with you, I've provided my documents, the debt counselor as well. And that is sometimes not seen. And that is a very in the trenches hit that we as the attorneys take based on the industry itself.
Cornell, when you speak about jurisdiction, I think for the debt counselors, it's been around from the beginning. Jurisdiction is a big swear word in the beginning, because we used to go where the debt counselor was situated, and then changed to say, no, you have to go where the consumer is. And that was a big change for the industry. So that's the first one, the first kind of thing I want to talk about. And the second one is jurisdiction again. Now, when you go to some courts, are there's some courts that are a little bit easier, so that the attorneys talk to each other and say, dude, that's a nice attorney. Oh, sorry, that's a nice magistrate, or careful, or that type of thing. Is it something that you guys chat to each other, amongst each other?
No, Corey, yeah, thank you for that. I think there's a few aspects to it on the jurisdictional side. So there's a story, and it's years ago, and I won't name any names, but there used to be an old magistrate in one of the courts here in Gauteng, and everyone on a Friday wished that they were appearing before this certain magistrate because he had a rule. Was the application served on the credit providers? Are there any opposition? No. Okay, where's your order? And I think I had on that day, I had 11 matters on the roll, debt review applications before him. And he walked in and you learn magistrates or you know them later and they know you. And I got before him and my instructions on the day where I had to proceed with 10 applications and I had to withdraw one application due to a consumer who terminated. And I couldn't keep up with handing up my orders to the magistrate. And I think he finished my applications in like 7 minutes. And when he was done, he looked at me and winked and said, "That's a new record." And it was like he had a record in how quick he wanted to grant orders. But then you get at a court where some of them are just insanely difficult with the requirements they have. We've seen it specifically, you get what we call acting magistrates, that they do not have a position that's permanent as of yet. So they are sometimes new as a magistrate and quite scared, and they don't want to make a decision that can come back and haunt them a little bit, if I could put it that way. So then you really have to convince them that they can do it. So there's some courts that we know it's going to be a fight. We're not going to get anywhere. And that's very frustrating because in the end, best for everyone in the debt review industry is to get finalization on it. And I think what's sometimes missed by the bench, meaning magistrates, is that even a credit provider prefers having an order in place as opposed to having something that is just hanging, because it immediately opens the door in terms of a proper Section 88(3) termination for them, that they can proceed with legal action, but it keeps everyone in limbo if orders aren't granted. And therefore, we would look at jurisdictions and say, okay, great, let's look at a consumer, because there's two ways you can do it. You either go to where the consumer lives or where the consumer work. So if we identify that the jurisdiction where the consumer stays is a very difficult one, but the one where they work is better, we would rather prefer to then go to the court where they work, because we know we would have a better chance of success.
And then, Cornel, what happens then if you go to court and the court order is not granted? Not postponed, the magistrate says, no, I'm not going to grant this court order. What happens in a circumstance like that?
Corey, also interesting question, because these different no's in our industry, it is the one no would be, let's take jurisdiction. No, you're in the wrong jurisdiction. That just means, great, I'm in the wrong one. This application, this specific one with this case number is done. I cannot proceed in this court. But then nothing prohibits the attorney and the debt counselor to go to the correct court and say, okay, let's get a new case number and a new court date, and we start basically afresh in a new court. Then there's this, let's call it the second no, is where I'm not certain in terms of the amount of information you've given me. I'm not happy with it. I'm just going to dismiss your application, but I'm not going to make any finding based on the consumer's financial position. And we've seen that. That means that there was no judgment based on the over-indebtedness or non-over-indebtedness of the consumer, which in essence and technically still leaves a door open to reissue that application and start afresh with it and provide more information. And then lastly, there's the no, you are not over-indebted and I do not agree with you being placed under debt review. That one closes the door at a magistrate's court for you, and then the debt counselor and the consumer must decide whether they are going to approach a high court on appeal, or if there were any issues with the way the magistrate adjudicated it and they take it on review. I think an interesting note on that is that to go on appeal is an expensive process, and therefore most likely a consumer who cannot afford his financials position at the moment and his monthly commitments will not have the money available to go on appeal. And I think that creates difficulty in developing the Credit Act from a debt counseling and consumer side, specifically. Because if a bank's not happy, there's deep pockets, there's a war chest. They appeal and they get the judgment they want in the end. So that creates still a little bit of a difference in the scale here. So the balance is always on the credit provider's side, and therefore you have to do what you can as a debt counseling attorney and for the applicant and the consumer, the DC and the consumer, to fight at the magistrate court level.
So that last one you mentioned now, where the court says the not over indebted, can that be seen as declared not over indebted and the consumer can then go off debt review because he is declared over indebted by the debt counsel? Does that then declare him not over indebted at court stage?
In essence, yes, Corey. So I think an interesting thing is what we've seen out of the case law is that the debt counselor's finding of over indebtedness is basically just something administrative. In law, it has no effect other than to say that the consumer has applied for debt review. The only person or place with the power to declare someone over indebted is the magistrate's court. So when they say, I don't declare you over indebted, in essence, what they are doing is they reject the provisional finding of the debt counselor, that provisional finding of over indebtedness, and therefore the consumer is then seen as not being over indebted and therefore qualifies to not be placed under debt review or being removed from the credit bureaus as being flagged under debt review.
Yeah, and I encourage those debt counselors who are listening to go check your NCT orders to see if you see any declaration of over indebtedness. So,
indeed, so.
Moving swiftly along, it sounds like you're doing a lot of work, Cornel. So when I say you, I mean attorneys. It sounds like you are integral to the process. You've got the debt counselor who gets the ball going, he does all the negotiations, prepares all these documents. You are carrying it across the line. You're going to the court, you're getting this court order, gets served on everybody. I presume you guys like to do that for free, you know, out of the kindness of your heart. You just get in the car and drive around thousands of kilometers. You spend hours sitting at court. You do that because you just want to? Or is it realistic to say that if you want professional work, you've got to pay professional fees?
Zach, that is very nuanced, I think, especially in this industry at this time with the amount of scams going around. And we all know the pressures the industry is under. But if we take a step back in terms of the legal fees, and I can rant and rave about it for probably the next half an hour, is that if the legal fee breaks the proposal, no one wins. That is where we have to meet minds in the industry. So the amount of work, if I have to go and tax this, if it's a normal debt review a normal court application, it's going to be probably north of 20,000 rand. And that is just stating it quick and easy. And it sounds wild, but that's most likely what it is. In terms of the legal fees, and I'm going to go in terms of structure, I'll go into that a little bit later. But let's say debt review didn't exist. And a consumer at this stage is under big pressure in terms of repaying his house and his car, and the banks are on him. And he approaches an attorney and says, listen, I'm in trouble. Can you assist? If that attorney tells that consumer, I'm going to charge you 10,000 rand to do it, that consumer is going to say, where do I sign? So if we just take it from that context, so the amount of work involved in the debt review process from an attorney side is that we are very down in the trenches on a consumer level specifically, because we must get original documents from those consumers. We must get original confirmatory affidavits. So a lot of times we see consumers in person, in our office, or at the court, and we are the ones they put a face to, because a lot of the times, it's just how the industry is that there is no face-to-face consultation of anyone. They speak on a phone with someone. They might have a Teams consultation or meeting with their debt counselor. But we are the ones that they engage down the process a bit. And then if you look at how fees are collected, sometimes they think it's not being paid to their creditors. And if a consumer is angry at his debt counselor, he shouts at us. If he's angry at a credit provider, the consumer shouts at one of my team members. And it's the same with a bad proposal. It is that a magistrate's angry at us, like, how can this proposal be before me? Or credit provider says, I'm going to oppose this. This is a ridiculous proposal. So as attorneys, we take quite a lot of flack in the industry, especially applicant or debt counseling attorneys, because we are the ones that they look at and say, but you sort it out. Get a better proposal. Here's my counter proposal. Make sure it's accepted. Or I've terminated. I don't care whether I've done it correctly, but I've done it. Please exclude my account. So that's just some of the examples we work with. And in terms of legal fees, it's a difficult thing to align in the industry. Yes, there's an affordability by the consumer, but that affordability doesn't necessarily align with the work that goes into assisting that consumer. So it's very easy to say, here's the rules, here's the guidelines, this is what we say you must charge. But the reality of it is, if you look at an attorney, and we get instructions for courts right across South Africa, what happens on our side is immediately we have to print original court packs. So there's a direct cost component. Then we have to physically courier those original. There's no online magistrates court systems at this stage. We must physically courier packs to our correspondent attorney. Let's say they are situated in Polokwane. So we courier there, they issue an application at court, they provide an invoice. They don't care if the consumer paid, they don't care if the DC paid us. They say, here's my invoice, please pay us. We as the attorneys, our companies take that risk and hit. So then we pay the correspondent, then we serve an application on the credit providers, then we must get an original service affidavit to the correspondent attorney. We courier once again, so that's another fee, around about 150 Rand, depending on where it is. Per time you courier, we courier again, they appear, they charge us the fees, we get fees afterwards. So we are in terms of service providers, for a large amount. And sometimes people don't see that. So my direct cost, which we pay to service providers, just as a small idea, is let's say 2,000 Rand on the file. Now consumers distributable is 3,000 Rand. It's physically impossible to provide a service for a consumer at 3,000 Rand if I have to appoint correspondence. That's just an example in terms of fees. And if we then look at what we would charge professionally, and I can give you an idea of what a large law firm in South Africa will charge, their second year associates will charge you north of 10,000 Rand an hour to review your case. That is to give you an idea of if we say we charge you 6,000 Rand on a debt review application, we probably spend 20 hours on that. If you divide it, then you get the idea of how affordable it is structured within the debt review industry. And I think sometimes we do it because we are passionate about it. It's hard work, but we love what we do. And I think we're privileged in that we can go to court, and in the end you walk out and you can actually feel that, listen, I've made a difference today. I've helped someone. This person is eating tonight or sleeping well. And I think that is something that makes the team tick. And we always tell the team in the office, listen, that file you work on, that's a human being. That's a person that trusts you to make a difference. And there's a fee linked to that. Unfortunately, we all have to survive. And that is the reality of it.
I'm actually good now. I was just thinking, I'm getting tired just thinking of all the work that you guys do. So it must be quite satisfying when you get those court orders, just to go back to your consumer or back to the debt counsel and say, here you go, there's your court cases, it's granted. I mean, that must be so satisfying.
I think that is most likely why we do it, Corey. It's because of that. It's completely different in that I don't issue a summons to take the car. I get to keep the car for the consumer, which completely changes how you think about what you do as an attorney. And that is a privilege in the end. I think just some examples on this is we had a file where the consumer's vehicle were repossessed. We had a consent order in place. The consumer never defaulted. There was summons issued, judgment granted, vehicle was repossessed by the bank. And only when it was repossessed, everything came to light, in essence. Then we figured out there's a summons, it was served on an old address, and in the end, we brought a rescission application, and it took us 6 months. It was a hard fight, but the court agreed with us and returned the vehicle to that consumer. That consumer was under pressure to keep her work because she needed to get to work, but now she doesn't have a car. But every single month, she's upholding her repayments on her consent order, even if she doesn't have a vehicle. So that is just, now you must convince someone for 6 months to pay for something that they do not have. And you have to tell them, listen, but I'm trying and I'm on your side. And when you get that done after 6 or 7 months, just that award of like, here's your car back. We said we were going to do it. It was tough, but here it is. And where people tell you that, listen, you've really made a difference, that makes me sleep at night and make me sleep well.
Yeah, well done for that. That's amazing. What a great story. Look, I mean, as you said, it's difficult. We have perhaps a slightly mistaken viewpoint that the legal system is always fair. I think on the balance of results, it's fair. And averaged across things, you're hoping for positive outcomes across all legal kind of matters countrywide. But there's always challenges, you know, and it would be naive to think that you might not be one of those people that gets one of those challenges. Just like coming into debt review, you might assume it always works perfectly. That might be a little bit naive. There's a lot of moving parts, so there's always room for trouble. Now, I was going to ask you about big fights at court with the credit providers, but now you've told us that. So maybe I should ask you, is it right to say the debt counselors, they're the good guys and the banks are the greedy, nasty people? I mean, is that like, are we being fair when we say that? Or do you find that some credit providers are actually quite aggressive in how they deal with their consumers?
Zach, yes. I think if we look at it, that there's a certain degree of fighting needed in the industry, and it's not necessarily that it's fighting for the fun of it, because attorneys do like that. They thrive on it. They say, there's the saying that when you go into a fight with an attorney, it's like fighting with a pick in the mud. At one point you realize they really do enjoy this, and it's just not, you're not going to get anywhere. But if we take a step back, sometimes it's the fight for fairness. And how was the act written? Just to give the consumer a voice, at least, and some leg to stand on. So therefore, the fighting is good in the sense that it develops the industry, it matures it. In essence, we are still a young industry. We have our challenges at the moment, but the way the fights happen, and if that's between credit providers, if that's between the NCR and the registrants, being it credit providers and debt counselors, if there's disagreements there, all of that matures and takes our industry forward. And the stuff we're going through at the moment is part of that. It's part of maturing. And the ones who's going to survive is the ones who's going to shape the future of the industry, we believe. And to fight with the credit providers is good in a sense that you get to develop a type of relationship with them, not necessarily the correct one at the time, but you get to a place where there's a certain amount of acceptance in terms of what's provided. So if you provide this to me in terms of your proposal and the consumer is going to pay me X amount, I'm more inclined to now negotiate with you. There's certain instances, we had a case, and I think it's very interesting and apt on this, is there's quite a big agreement in the industry. So if you have two houses or two properties, it's difficult to include both of the properties because one is your main residence and the other one, what are you doing with that? And we had a big fight with one of the banks on it, and the property in question was being rented out by the consumer. And the debt counselor took a chance and said, guys, let's fight this, because what happens is the bond amount is a certain amount, but the rental income is significantly more than the bond amount, and that is used to repay his debts. And this consumer is being placed in a position that there is clearly an attempt in good faith by the consumer to repay his debt. And in the end, the court agreed and didn't exclude the account. There was a big fight on it. Proper argument, bank delivered all of their affidavits, heads of argument, and judgment came out, account was included, and consumer was paying for it. And probably about a month or two after the judgment was granted, the bank reached out to our offices and said, listen, we got the judgment, our instructions are the following, we have to go on appeal, but why not negotiate? Let's see if we can't get to an agreement. And it was about a month and a half or two up and down of the consumer debt counselor and bank. And we decided to up the amount that was paid to the bank. And the bank said, great, we're happy. And the order was varied based on that. And I think that's a very good example of, we might disagree, but in the end, we always still work together. And in the end, the bank's getting their money and the consumer is in a position that he can still afford it. So yes, we're fighting hard sometimes, but in the end, we always try and fight fair. And sometimes it's not a fair fight. We're just going to fight with what we have. But as I've said, sometimes you must realize that that's what we enjoy.
Cornell, some courts do. Why do some courts? I've always wanted to know this. You know, some courts want a certain application a certain way. Other courts want some courts. Do they still want the consumer there, where other consumers shouldn't be at court? Why is this?
I think if we take the analogy of a restaurant, there's a menu. So it's the same law, but there's different recipes. So it's the same ingredients, but there's different recipes. Some of you like a medium rare steak and some of you don't like steak at all. You rather want some seafood. And that is the reality with the law. It's different ways that people interpret it. It's different ways that they apply it. And that is not necessarily incorrect. In my view, I have one way, but I have to convince someone else that that is the correct one. And because of that reason and the fact that the law is so broad, you have people interpreting, applying it differently. They bake a different cake. And that is just the reality of it. They want different stuff and we have to comply with that. So some say consumer, yeah. And we've had it. A great example is for a long time in one of the courts in Gauteng, we had to have the consumer there, and it was an absolute nightmare, to be honest, because the amount of stuff that comes out from a consumer, which is different to what is necessarily being placed there. And that is just, it seems like a good opportunity to pay less sometimes for a consumer, and it creates issues, but there's nothing wrong with it, but it's difficult. And I think that is why it's not always seen. If we take the tribunal, it's one recipe, you submit the same thing over and over again. It's quick, it's easy. People prefer it. The act is not written that is the only route. And we have to understand that. So if someone else decides we're taking a different route, we're going to have the issue where different magistrates, different courts, different jurisdictions want different things from us. And that is where we come in as the attorneys, and what we do as a firm from VHC Attorneys Aside. We look at that. We advise the clients. We get the documents ready prior to appearing in that court to comply with the specific court requirements.
Yeah, and well done. I mean, we can see the results, saving people's cars, saving people's houses. We can really hear you're passionate about it. And you know, it's nice to see how you're fighting the good fight. Yeah, I want to just say to all the attorneys that are listening, well done, guys. Please keep it up. Consumers, they really need your help. The debt counselors need your assistance. We value what you do, so thank you very much. Now, Cornell, you sound like a pretty smart person. You know, us dummies, you know, if we wanted to get hold of you and we said, hey, we need some legal assistance here, how do people reach out to you? How do we get hold of you?
Yeah, to take a step back on that, Zach, smart, I think, is a big word. So hold on to that thought. I'll also hold on to it. It makes me feel good. But for us, VHD attorneys, we work nationwide. We have offices in Gauteng, and we appear in all the courts in Gauteng ourselves. Then we're also in Cape Town with a team, and we've got a duplicated setup. The two offices work very closely together, and they appear in most of the Western Cape metropole area ourselves as well. So we cover a very large portion of courts, and traditionally debt counseling companies as books within those areas ourselves, where we don't need to appoint correspondents. And then we have a network countrywide that can assist us to appear in courts where we need them to. And we also handle quite a large amount of NCT work, whether that's variation orders, direct NCT applications, regulatory work. And if you want to get hold of us, best is to Google us, VHD Attorneys. You'll find us there. We're available. You can give us a good review if you know us. You can give us a bad review if you don't know us. We'll try and get it removed, but it's so difficult. But so we on Google, you'll find all our contact details there. You can email me directly by just going to our team on our website, by just clicking on email me, and I'll get the information. You can give us a call on the number on our website. The team's always ready to take your call and assist. And not only debt counselors, we work with a large amount of consumers directly as well, where consumers are in the process of attempting to exit the process. We do a full application procedure with them, where we qualify or disqualify them based on certain legal criteria. And yeah, and I think in the past 6 weeks alone, we've assisted almost 50 consumers legally with court orders, updated that the NCR on the debt help system to exit debt reviews. And it's done in a way where consumers can afford their debt, and they're placed in a position that they can re-enter the credit market.
Okay, so just Googling VHT. It sounds pretty simple, right? Like, okay.
Yeah, so always say Victor Hotel Tango.
All right, nice. Now, before we let you go, I heard a whisper on the wind, a little birdie tweeting in the background, hinting at things that might be on the horizon. Is there any truth to the rumor that attorneys might be looking to share their skills across the industry a little bit closer in the future?
Zach, I think, yeah. There was quite a large amount of noise a week or two ago regarding a certain position paper that was distributed in the industry. And if you look at it at face value, is that attorneys are pushed a little bit to the side on it. And I think a few attorneys reached out, and we started chatting a bit to each other, in that we believe we do play a large role and an important role in the industry, and that we help to shape the industry. We all know we have a Credit Act that's not written as good as it should have and could have been. But the way to make it better and to clean up our industry and to get understanding is by being the attorneys we are and getting clarity on it and how it should be interpreted. And to do that, we have to go to court and we have to be in the trenches. So we started chatting with some colleagues, and we're looking at setting up a debt review attorney association. And it's very, very early days. We don't want to say too much or put any dates or timelines on it. But we believe we can play a large role in shaping and being a voice in the industry, such as the CASA and NDCA. And just participate as a collective a little bit and say, but here's what we see. This is what we experience. I think we're privileged in the fact that we see a massive amount of consumers from a large amount of different debt counseling companies or debt counselors themselves. And we see different debt counseling entities and how they operate. And I think that gives us a very good perspective and insight as to how the industry operates, because we have that insight. Naturally, we don't share what we know based on privileged, but what we can do is we can provide a voice and we can provide clarity on some things that we believe is sometimes not seen. So we're looking forward to working on that. And if there's any attorneys listening, they're more than welcome to reach out. And we're looking at throwing some ideas around and setting this up in future.
Yeah, I think you can never go wrong by sharing some skills, sharing some information. More communication never hurts in any industry. And it's nice to hear that you guys are so cooperative in what could otherwise be a competitive space. So well done on representing the consumers, bringing their voice to the courts. Well done on looking after the debt counselors and to the attorneys who are representing the credit providers. You know, thanks for being reasonable. Thanks for hearing the arguments that get made, and thanks for being open to negotiations and stuff like that. Thanks, Gunnel.
Gunnel, yet dummies have a magic wand. I don't know if you've ever seen it, if you've heard about the magic wand, but we've got one, and I'm going to hand it to Zach, and Zach will wave the magic wand, and I'm sure he'll tell you all about it.
Okay, so we give you 2 minutes with the magic wand, and you can change anything you want with Debt Review in the entire industry, in the act, in the court processes. Here you go. We hand it to you. What do you want to do with this magic wand? You can change something. Go.
Thank you, Zach. If I could, I would have loved to be the only magistrate considering any debt reviews in the country, but that's not happening and it's not a good idea. But taking a step back, I think the industry needs some change in that there needs to be a better collective voice, number one, and how it should change, and I wish it changed or the act was different, is that the NCR needs more help, especially the Debt Review Department, in terms of what they can do and that they can move quicker. I think the speed in our industry in terms of what's happening is very slow. So my wish would be that we can engage better, engage quicker, make decisions that benefits consumers, as opposed to how do we try and keep people in line or out of line. And if we could change the industry in that we can make decisions that benefits consumers, that happens in reality and not an intention, would make a massive, massive difference in our industry. And we can go on about what should change in the act and all of that, but the act can change. But if we're not, as a collective, working to real solutions for consumers, and not forward up solutions and what will work, then we'll actually go to a place where we should be as an industry.
Yeah, I like that. Cornell, thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it. I think we can chat to you all day. But yeah, thank you very much for your time. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you for all the hard work that you guys do. I know attorneys don't always get the best rap, but we love you. We love what you do. And thank you very much for spending some time with these dummies.
Yeah, we can't spend all day with him. Corey, he charges by the hour. What are you talking about? No, man.
I was just wondering, to whom should I send my invoice?
I'm leaving right now. Sorry, I have to be somewhere else.
Corey, thank you so much for the time and the platform. I appreciate it. And yeah, thank you for the good work you guys do as well, and big positive energy and just bringing the vibe you do to the industry. I think that's always good and we need that. And I'm looking forward to working with you guys for many years in the industry and all of the other industry players. And it's a privilege to be part of it, as tough and hard as it can be some days. In the end, it's one that still keeps us going.
Well, I feel a little bit smarter after that discussion. I must say, it's nice to talk to these smarties, and I'm certainly not covering the bill, so I'm going to send it to you, dude. It's in the mail. But Yeah, nice to hear. It's amazing. It must be very cool. You know, as debt counselors, we enjoy helping people restructure their payment processes and things so that they can afford what they really need to. But when it comes to the fights, oh, when we're trying to save someone's car, someone's house, yeah, we are very grateful for the attorneys that fight the good fight.
Yeah, I must say, my early days when I started with Debt Review, I used to go to court with the attorneys, and the consumers were there. And I must say, it's not in everybody's forte. It's not everybody can do that type of thing. So you need a special kind of person to do that. So yeah, my hats off to the attorneys. They do a really, really hard work. Yeah, there we go. Hats off. So yeah, absolutely fantastic to speak to someone that knows their story. For those who want to check them out, you're more than welcome to go to vhtlaw.co.za. Go have a look and get in touch. They're really, really a friend to the dummies. And I must say it's really lucky to speak to Cornell today.
Yeah, thank you, Corey. Great, great time today.
Well, yeah, again, Zach, thank you very much for your time. Thank you to our listeners, and we'll see you on the next episode of Debt Review with Dummies. Da-da-da.